Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. At 24 and a half more minutes of this show today, and we thank you, as always, for listening. I'm Tim with Ed and Fred, and if you want to send us an email, comments@AFR.net is the address. comments@AFR.net is the address. And remember, emails need to be K-Love emails. Positive and encouraging.
Because that's what we're like. We're positive and encouraging people.
The positive energy coming out of this room on a daily basis kind of exudes.
Oh, we're exuding all over the place. We're the kings of exuding.
Let's stop right there. Move on. Good morning, Steve Paisley Jordahl.
Good morning, everybody.
How you doing, brother?
I'm well.
So, Steve, what's first on your news docket?
I want to bring up a greatest hits. This is going to the Trump indictment. I know that's kind of
which one?
The latest one, the Georgia one.
Okay.
Taking all the oxygen out of the room. But do you guys remember the name Emily Kors?
I don't. I remember Emily Kors, Post, but not
no,
Emily Kors.
No, Emily Kors was the early 20-something, I'm sorry, Emily, a little airheadish girl that was the foreman of the Trump, of the grand jury in Georgia that did a victory lap. Month or two ago. Do you remember that girl?
It was last year.
It was a long time ago, way before.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to listen to, this is her. I don't know if this is her coming out.
She's still on it? She's still on the
no,
grand jury?
No, this is from before. This is her grand jury that just returned this, I think.
Okay.
Just listen to Cut 11 and we can.
Did you personally want to hear from the former president?
I wanted to hear from the former president, but honestly, I kind of wanted to subpoena the former president because I got to swear everybody in. And so I thought it'd be really cool to get 60 seconds with President Trump of me looking at him and being like, do you solemnly swear? And me getting to swear him in. I just thought that would be an awesome moment.
After everything that you've seen, what would your reaction be if the DA decides against bringing any charges after what you've seen?
I will be sad if nothing happens. This was too much information, too much of my time, too much of everyone's time. There was just too much for this to just be, oh, okay, we're good, bye.
Do y'all remember that?
I didn't remember all that. I know who you're talking about. She's like 25 or
something like that.
28 and, years old.
And Emily Smores?
Kors.
Was her name? Oh, I know.
Is she AOC's sister?
She might be, and I think she might be somehow related to Corinne Jean-Pierre.
So you're saying,
I'm just saying.
You're saying she's Coors Light.
That's what she, she both, seemed to be.
They both go to the same helium bar.
I've never heard of a chairman of a grand jury. Is that what she was?
Yes.
Doing TV interviews.
It was odd.
Wasn't that odd?
Yeah.
So this grand jury, which was the one who approved the indictments yesterday in Georgia, they started, you keep the same grand jury? I don't understand that. Excuse my ignorance. A grand jury convenes to hear evidence to whether or not to indict or not indict, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
On a criminal case. Right?
Or criminal cases. Or sometimes they'll hear
multiple cases. That's right. Have you ever been part of that?
I've not been a part of a grand jury. My wife has.
So what
and
did
she was there for the whole week. And it was, I think it was county. I don't think it was city. And it was all child abuse cases the whole week. And they listen to the evidence. They indict. Listen to a different case. Listen to the evidence. They indict.
Or not indict.
Or not indict. Right.
You have to have enough evidence for the grand jury. How many people are on a grand jury, typically?
I think it's 12.
I don't know, though.
So would all 12 have to agree? We need a lawyer here. Would all 12 have to agree, or is it a majority?
It probably depends on the location.
State?
Yeah. on the regulations.
So they may say 10 out of 12 have to say there's enough evidence to move forward with an indictment. And then the indictment doesn't mean somebody's guilty, obviously.
Correct.
It's a bad word to have coming at you. But, you know, the old saying, you can indict a ham sandwich. I mean, it doesn't. The standards of evidence to be used in court are not existent in a grand jury indictment, even though they have the word indictment. I mean, excuse me, jury listed before.
Right.
They're really not there to say any more than, yeah, we think there's enough here to move forward
with the indictment and a trial. Because
exactly right.
The defendant doesn't, the defendant isn't even there. There's no evidence
right.
Placed before the jury.
Right.
There are no attorneys, defense attorneys.
Right.
It's all the prosecutor saying, this is the evidence we have. We want you to indict and we'll move forward with the trial.
I think the purpose of a grand jury in general is so that if the prosecution, if you have a prosecutor or a police department or an attorney who can bring charges against somebody willy-nilly just on their own say-so, what's to keep someone from using that as a revenge tool? You have to go through, this is running the charges past the public so that there's some
right.
form of accountability to the person who's bringing the charges.
It's a good check mm-hmm. to, you know.
But probably not in Fulton County.
Well,
but I mean, just as a general
right
judicial practice across America, yes. a grand jury is a great idea.
Agree.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
To screen against what
frivolous stuff.
Yeah, what Steve's talking about.
Because right if you even if you're absolutely not guilty, you got to pay for a lawyer. That can get really expensive. So to prevent that kind of frivolous prosecution, they could bankrupt somebody. It is good to run it past a jury, a grand jury in this case, of your peers.
Yeah. All right, go ahead, Steve.
I heard you last hour, Ed, you were talking about the divide in this country and are we going to just go to our own separate spaces and sides and what's the anger out there? Was it that what – am I remembering correctly what you guys were talking
it's
about?
It's hard for me to bring this down to a normal person's level because yeah. I was in genius mode
you
at
were.
The time. but, yes, that is
– Well, I want to tell you –
Balkanization of America.
I might have an answer for you, and it's not pleasant. According to a poll from NORC, which is associated with the University of Chicago, it's a credible polling outfit, they found that this country is divided and ready to fight. And I want you to hear, this is, you're going to hear from University of Chicago Professor Robert Pape. He was on Face the Nation over the weekend. And this is what NORC found. Cut five.
You are seeing this radicalization on both sides of the political spectrum. 30 million people, according to your numbers, think the use of force is justified to prevent Donald Trump from being president. 18 million think it's justified to restore Trump to the presidency.
Exactly. What we're seeing is not simply a manifestation on the right. That is absolutely important. And there's no doubt that January 6th, the crowd that sieged the Capitol, is something that has not happened on the left. Mm-hmm. So I'm not trying to draw that equivalence. But nonetheless, what we need to look at are the sentiments on both the right and the left that are being radicalized to millions and millions of Americans.
Wow, that's pretty stunning. That's you're talking about 48 million people.
Yep.
That's 30 million on the left, 18 million on the right.
A little more than 10% of the country.
Yeah, that's and here's the thing. Those are numbers that are significant enough to do some real damage if they ever actually went out and committed acts of violence.
I want to follow up a little bit on what this professor said about 9/11 or January 6th. The fact that no Democrats, the left hasn't done this. Well, the left didn't lose an election.
Right.
What this poll says is that there are 60 or whatever. However,
well, they have lost an election.
Well, but they didn't lose that election. They didn't lose. Trump didn't win the election. If Trump had won the election, they might. This poll says 30 million of them would have been willing to march on the Capitol to prevent him from being inaugurated or sworn in. So that's a lot of people that are
so
very,
if,
very
if
angry.
Trump became, and of course, all these are big ifs.
Yeah.
Because we, like Tim, you're saying, this next year is going to be, it's going to be a circus. All right. So if Donald Trump gets the Republican nomination, if Donald Trump won and went back into, it was reelected in 2024, what you're saying is 30 million are, have at least said, whether they actually would do it or not, nobody knows.
Well, they say it's justified.
Would fight to keep him from
would be
going
okay
into the
with violence to keep him from taking office, and absent a complete Democrat landslide beyond any doubt, there are 18 million people who will believe that the second election, if he loses, was stolen from him, yeah, and are willing to fight to put him in.
And that's why I say that it's important that institutions have credibility in a country like ours. Now, I'm going to take a sidestep here and leave the Trump, Biden, all that stuff. But the institutions like the medical community, mental health community, over COVID, scientific community, over climate change, transgender stuff, all that, they have taken huge hits. And public schools, Congress, the news media is way down there with members of Congress in terms of people not trusting them. Universities and colleges, we are seeing institutions losing their credibility with the American people, and that's a potentially dangerous. That's a recipe for serious trouble over the next 12
indeed.
Months.
It is indeed. So, just be forewarned. Can we talk about Maui for a second?
Yes, yeah. I don't think we've updated that story.
Now, I haven't seen new numbers. It was about 100 this morning that had confirmed dead, but I read yesterday that as of early Monday morning, our time, so this is more than 24 hours ago, they had only been able to get through about 3% of the burned-out rubble with, like, cadaver dogs to find as many. They still
3%?
Have 3% as of yesterday morning. It's more now, but they expect to find a number of more bodies. There's 1,000 people missing. Well, it was horrible. And as you would expect, our friend Steve Tiber decided to jump in the fray and do what he could. I had a conversation with him yesterday. I just want to update everybody about what 8 Days of Hope is hoping to do. It's hard because they can't drive their trucks to Hawaii to do what they would normally do. So this is Steve Tiber about how they're going to respond to Hawaii. This is
we've already connected with multiple churches who are on the front lines providing food and diapers and clothing and just some of the necessities that we all need to live. And, you know, we're going to be there. We're rolling up our sleeves. We're going to get after it tomorrow and very quickly see where God connects the dots. We could bring feeding equipment, and, you know, we looked into it today to ship feeding equipment to Maui from Tupelo. You're looking at $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, just about as much as the equipment you would take would cost. Maybe we come alongside them and provide resources, finances for them. Maybe bring our cooking team over.
So they're considering different things. It's almost prohibitive to bring their equipment over. So they're thinking of he said that they are going to have people over there. They'll take people, and you have to find your own way. If you do 8 Days of Hope, you have to make it to the site on your own. So as many people as can get to Hawaii to do this, they will be there to help people rebuild, but they won't have all the equipment, so they're going to be working through other churches and other agencies. But they are responding.
This is unfair to ask you because I'm just maybe off the top of your head, you might know. How long does it take to get a ship from Los Angeles to Hawaii? I'm thinking about all the kinds of equipment you want to take over there. Because it'd be very expensive to fly everything, like these big kitchen outfits that they have.
The military is using their transport planes.
Oh, okay.
To send vehicles and that sort of thing.
Okay.
So all of that is going on. It actually started last week.
All right.
Shipping things in.
So and not just military stuff, so civilian stuff.
Civilian stuff as well.
6 to 9 days.
It is how many days?
Six to 9 days is standard
by ship. Yeah, and that will happen as well.
Yeah,
But Samaritan's Purse is sending their DC-8 with supplies in. So that is happening. If you go to AFN.net, I just put up a new video this morning. And we've used this comparison before, but it looks like a nuclear bomb has gone off.
Yeah.
That is what you're seeing. But there was another interesting picture yesterday. It was a burnt out community, but there's one building that survived, a church.
Really?
And somebody went with a video camera and they walked around this church and it was like it was untouched.
Wow.
In the middle of everything. It was an amazing picture.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah.
Is that, you said that's on AFN?
AFN.net. Go there and you'll just, and I don't know, picture's worth 1,000 words, but, and we say it looks like a bomb went off, but when you really look at this and you see what people are facing, they, as we talked about yesterday, they've lost everything because they had to leave quickly. It's not like when we hear of a hurricane coming.
Right.
Tornado coming.
You have a couple days.
You got a couple of days or whatever the case may be.
Yeah,
that kind of thing. It's minutes. We're talking about minutes that they had.
Well, and as we also mentioned yesterday, part of the problem for this is if an individual in any community in the country, if an individual loses their home in a fire, you're usually, or even a tornado, you have several homes wiped out. People band together and they take to these unfortunate families the things they need to start getting their lives back together. But there's no neighborhood. There's no neighbors here. This has all been wiped out. Everyone's in the same position.
Yeah.
I did talk with a pastor in a nearby town who said that so much stuff has been arriving as in terms of water and bedding and food and clothing and the necessities that as of now, or as of yesterday, the Hawaiian officials had said, stop bringing it. We have enough for just that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Now, it's long-term. They'll need more.
Right.
The pastor told me that this is going to be years in the recovery.
Right.
They haven't even started the recovery. They're still dealing with the shock right now.
Yeah.
So I do have a story running on AFN that talks about, talked to this pastor I ran this morning.
AFN.net.
Yep. Hey, did you guys talk about the Biden response to the
A little bit. Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to talk a couple things. I think you guys might have mentioned that President Biden himself had a no comment, was very reserved with his words.
Yes.
Well, his White House has decided to step in. They have put out a fact sheet about what the Biden-Harris administration is doing in Maui. There's about 10, 15 bullet points, and most of it is we're sending a bunch of people to look and to, you know, help. But there is this, you know, FEMA has also authorized critical needs assistance, which provides a one-time payment of $700 per household to applicants who are displaced from their homes and have critical needs. I'm hearing a lot of people say, really, $700? As someone who just went through a damage to my home from the tornado, like you guys were talking about, that's barely enough to get the application thing going.
Yeah.
I don't know what – this was such a self-inflicted wound for Joe Biden. This was his chance to step out of the politics and the Trump whole shadow and say, America is in need. We're going to respond. We're there. And he – couldn't put two sentences together to take advantage of that.
That goes to what Tim said in the last hour, that it seems increasingly clear that Joe Biden cannot string together two sentences. If you're on vacation and relaxing, and I don't mind for, you know, presidents relaxing on vacation, and
the football follows them.
Yeah, that's right. So, but if you're relaxing, and someone asks you a question like that, it should be relatively easy to get back into the mode and say just what you just said, and for him to not be able to do that, it's twice, right?
Who says no comment to a natural disaster response?
Right.
That's just, did he even understand the question would be Mike?
They were pretty close to him when they asked it. I want to play one more little bit of sound. Corinne Jean-Pierre was asked yesterday in their press conference about.
Was she clear?
Well, no, she wasn't. She wasn't. She might have thought she was.
She wanted to be clear.
I want to set this up. So she was asked about the Biden response, and she talked about the two senators from Hawaii. Now, their names are Mazie Hirono.
Right.
She's been there a long time. And Senator Schatz. All right. Listen to what she says when she's asked cut six.
Senator Hirono, who I said the president spoke to just last night, he thanked the president for the immediate support of federal agencies have delivered for residents of Hawaii. And so does has Senator Schatz.
Wow.
So
she misgendered him.
She called Hirono he.
Yes.
And mispronounced the name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She doesn't even know who they are.
No, not a clue.
And so, you know that, even if you don't know who they are, which I'm going, come on. You're the White House press secretary and you don't know two Democrats?
Well, and you have to know that Hawaii's going to come up.
That's what I'm saying.
You look that up.
You practice this before you ever go out on the stage.
Yeah.
Well, behind the podium.
I'm going to be asked.
You get this. That's your job.
Right.
Just so it's just... I don't know. I don't know what to say anymore about her. She's.
I will say this, well, that in terms of the Georgia indictment, I'm glad you have not played Hillary Clinton laughing about
that. I could,
that.
But I won't.
I saw that story this morning, and I thought, I don't want to hear her.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear her laughing.
No.
Cackling. She cackles.
She does.
Kind of like
But
Kamala
does she
Harris.
Cackle clearly? Is she clear about it?
Clinton's.
Cackle?
Clear cackling?
Yes.
That's not easy to say.
No. Yeah, I know. All right, who's next?
All right, let's end with this. There's trouble.
Are we going to end with this?
Yes, there's
Promise.
Trouble in Hollywood Land.
Okay.
Do you guys remember the movie The Blind Side? It was
yes.
Michael, Sandra Bullock was in it. The story of Michael Orr, who went to Ole Miss. It was a story about him getting to Ole Miss and how the Tuohy family.
You better be careful about this story, but go ahead.
How they helped him along. Well, they found out recently that Michael Orr wasn't officially adopted by them because they were told, the Tuohys were told, according to the Tuohys, that you can't adopt an adult. Well, they put a conservatorship over the relationship to make it binding, legally binding. And now Michael Orr is a little unhappy with it and saying that he's actually suing them for... taking money, would they say, making money off the film for him, from him, and when he's not family. They say they haven't made much money at all. I mean, they're multimillionaires from Mr. Tuohy's food empire.
Right.
So some in the tens of thousands of dollars.
Real estate, too, I think. Sean Tuohy's into real estate.
Somewhere in the tens of thousands of dollars since the film came out years ago is what they have garnered. But, yeah, I still love the movie.
Well... So I've heard people comment, and I don't know much about the truth of this. A conservatorship is a real thing. That's a legal document. That's a legal arrangement. I'm not sure he's going to have the football player, Michael Orr, is going to have much success with this. But I have been reading, and some people have been commenting that he did not save his own money
from
the NFL, and now he's looking. Pocket change elsewhere.
Yeah, why does this happen now?
Yeah.
Well, and plus, the Tuohy family was independently wealthy before they ever met Michael Orr.
Right.
They helped that young man, and the story's well documented. And I don't know what's going on with him right now, but I think this is very unfair to the Tuohy family.
And hurtful to them, too.
That's my personal opinion after what I've read about this.
They're taking the high road. Saying we wish Michael well, we're hurt, but we don't. We love him. We love him still.
All right. It was a great movie, by the way, with Sandra Bullock.
No good deed goes unpunished.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, hope you have a great day. Keep listening to American Family Radio, and we'll see you back here tomorrow.